hear no complaint. Hear that? No complaint. Oh, hey, isn't this nice? I'm on a connoisseur's list here, Nick. I'm on a connoisseur's list for art objects. And you know what you can buy now? I'm just so excited. I've ordered it. Playboy's toothbrush. Flesh-colored falsies. Minis, of course, on a regulation toothbrush handle. Excellent for healthy gum massage. You didn't hear that. You think about it for a minute. Always. I miss Jerry. He takes his rubber band off. Wait a minute here. I'm going to tune up. Yep, you know, I'm going to take you down and see Hank Williams' car. It's on display down at the county fair. Yeah, the car that Hank Williams died in 1953. That fun flow Cadillac is now on display, and I'm going to take you down there and see it. Costs only $2 per admission to see it. That's a real religious object. Just a minute here. All right, if you will, one thing I like about folk acts is that they spend at least 20 minutes tuning up on stage for every minute and a half they play. So I'm going to do a little tuning up here. It's all part of the act, you know. You like to get backstage in showbiz and see how we create these, you know, these fantastic sounds. I remember I used to work with a guy named Jiggs Donahue who played the jug with the Chuck Akri Colorado Cowhand crowd, and he used to tune up on this gallon jug he got. And he got it from Flick's Tavern. He used to stand around up on the stage and blow on the top of that jug. He wouldn't play until he got that jug tuned up. And I'm going to, just a moment here. Oh, that's good. Good. Let me try a little bit here. Okay, let's go. Let's get this thing moving here. Come on now. We're brought to you tonight by Purina Chick Chow. If you got a slow-laying chick, friends, you've come to the right place. Watch that big old checkerboard square box. And it says Purina Chick Chow that your hand's going to lay. All right, let's go. Here we go. Fantastic. Thank you. Coming from you, that's a big admission. That's, make no mistake about it. I play this little thing. Now, would you please, if you will, in there, Big Al? Marty, set that up, will you please? Give me, let's go. We've been having a tremendous number of requests. The public has just been besieging me with requests to do Saints. Put the Saints. Got the Saints up there? Set the Saints up there. And listen, how about a little head thumping tonight? You like a little head thumping tonight? After all, it's the beginning of the week. Not much has happened. I mean, you know, demonstrations are going on, usual stuff. Summer fun is going on. And let's try again in keeping with our avowed purpose here to give the public what they deserve. We are tonight. there's been a number of all set, a number of requests. All right, please, if you will, Marty, please. Eins, zwei, drei, hit it, big. Come on, let's go. Yeah, yeah. Very good. Well, I was encouraged, you know, and I read that. Oh yeah, so it's breaking out all over, just simply just busting out all. Of course, things aren't always what they seem to be. If you like a little head thumping tonight, I just feel like it, you know, just one of those loose nights. And we've had at least. Wait, let me tune up here, Marty. I think if you will, if you'll dig out. Give me Chic on this one. Chic. And that's... No, that's good enough. Keep that one up. Did you have Saints set up in there? Saints. Give me Saints. All right. All right. Never heard this, have you? All right, here we go. Now, if you will... Marty's in there getting everything set. Marty? You don't have to cue it up. Just get it set up. And Marty, if you will, give me a slight echo chamber. Just a little. Yes, let me hear. Okay, here we go. All right, let's go. Eins, zwei, drei, hit it. Thank you. That was very nice. I see all that setting up. Thank you. Okay. God, that changes the ashes. Whee! Hey, listen, I want to ask personal psychological question here tonight. The other night, I'm in the sack, see? Sound asleep. I mean, you know, just like any other human being. When all of a sudden, I began to see something before my eyes. Now, you know, I always talk about dreams. And I rarely ever remember anything I dream about. But this was such a startling dream that I couldn't, you know, help but remember it. And so I woke up, you know, in the middle of it, oh my God. So I wake up, you know, I stagger around. I jump out of the sack, oh, I'm sweating. There's only one thing I can do after such a fantastic dream. I run into the refrigerator and open it up, and I knock down a diet Yoo-Hoo. Oh, yeah. That's the only thing they bring. The diet strawberry, wild strawberry Yoo-Hoo. It's just fantastic. So you put a little vodka in that wild strawberry Yoo-Hoo, a little touch of cherry juice, and then, oh, that's called a czar's downfall. It's fantastic. So I had a little of this, this diet Yoo-Hoo, and I'm staggering around. And suddenly I said, oh, no, what a crazy thing to dream. I mean, you know, sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning, you come face to face with your own deep, innate rottenness. And, yeah, I'm really, it's just, what monsters are inside of us? So what did I dream? Well, all right, I'll tell you how it started. I'm lying there seeing, and you know how it is when you're asleep. There's nothing, you know. You don't see anything. we've all slept, right, gang? That's something we've all, comparatively, I suppose some of you haven't, but let's say in general, I don't like to generalize too much, but in general, most of you at one time or another in your life have experienced the phenomenon of sleep. Although I did read in one of the magazines, a medical magazine, for those of you that want to keep up with this stuff, that there's a guy who's fooling around with some kind of pills which does away with sleep. And he knocks down two or three of these babies a night, and he can get by on 2.5 hours of sleep. Fitful sleep, too. So now he's got 21, 22-hour a day. Now, and that means he can do 3 jobs. Of course, he hasn't done anything with it. If most scientists don't, you know. Unfortunately, they sit down and write a learned paper or something like that with their time instead of, you know, having a ball. But that's the way it is. It's just they waste the good stuff on the wrong people all the time. So nevertheless, he's knocked down his pills. He doesn't have to sleep. He says it has played hob with his married life. In a lot of ways, and so I'm not going to comment on that. We don't want to get into that. That's the Cosmopolitan Magazine department. Yeah, we'll let Rona Jaffe answer that one. So, or Jacqueline Suzanne, other deep thinkers of our time. I just like to fool around. I'm not a deep thinker, no. Oh, no, just over the surface, you know. I just, you know, fool around, throw the bobber in once in a while, see what's nibbling, that's about it. And yeah, this is WR New York, friends, in case you're really mad. You can write in. So, nevertheless, I'm lying in the sack there, see, and I all of a sudden, in the middle of my sleep, see, it's terrible. Do you, I don't know, I don't know how to bring this up. I don't want to embarrass anybody. But when you have dreams and you're fitful sleep, do you dream in color? You do. Well, you know that only one person out of 7 does. How do I know that? Well, I'm just quoting that outdated psychology textbook. All right, everybody's mad now. They all claim they all dream in color. The new man dreams nothing in color, and it's 8-track stereo, the whole shtick, I'm sure. But nevertheless, this is a new improved human being. He's got everything going. He's got a transistorized pancreas, the whole bit, you know, removable components, modular components, of course. You know, they just plug out. So nevertheless, I'm laying in the sack there, see. And, because I'm so, you know, so long I've been in showbiz, I can't think in terms of, you know, like most people just experience things. Now, the average person who goes to a show, he probably sits there and he flaps his hands like a couple of flippers on a seal, you know, hey, bring it on, bro. Take it off, come on, baby, let's go, you know. And he loves this kind of stuff, but being in show business myself, ever since I was the age of 6, I tend to think technically about a show. I can't really, Except the show. It's just like, this is the curse of ball players, for example. A ball player going to a ball game, he's out of his bird half the time. He is. He's bugged, you know, all the time. And he keeps seeing things that they should have done that were wrong and all that. And it's great, you see, if ignorance is bliss, friends. It is. In fact, I suspect that the new movement in schools will be to teach bliss, ergo ignorance. And therefore, you'll have a blissful human being. If you keep them totally unaware of the fact that there is more here than meets the eye, and that Attila the Hun is still on the scene, and his love will show up any minute and I'll belt you over the top of the head with a mace, you'll be blissful. It's groovy, you know, it'd be blissful. It's nothing like bliss, I say. A little bliss never hurt anybody, right? Or is it a little bliss never hit nobody? And if you're going to work on it from that standpoint, you got to work backwards from it, see? So, nevertheless, I'm lying in the sack there, and whenever I dream, I find that I'm criticizing my dreams, technically. First of all, I find that they're quite often, whoever it is that's producing these crummy shows, is guilty of inordinately bad editing. They leave a lot of dull scenes in, and the really great scenes, which, you know, should be given a little more play, are generally either cut off right in the middle of them, or else they're just hinted at. And so now, frankly, who do you think is producing your dreams? Is inside of your head, is there a tiny Ingmar Bergman, or is there a Mack Sennett? I mean, are your dreams being produced by? No, you got to think of these things. Are your dreams hip and with it? No, that's right. That's what I thought. Most of people's dreams are being produced by the same guy who makes the home movies, you know, in the little 8mm camera and shows an Aunt Emily standing on the back porch scratching. So anyway, I'm lying in the sack there, see. Now, let's get back here. We're not discussing your dreams. We'll give you the show later on. But I'm lying in the sack. No, this is what happened to me. You got to know it. It's for the benefit. I'm putting this down only for really for a scientific rectitude. I want to make it sure that any of you who are cursed with this same problem know that there are fellows with you that are struggling through the same desert of bad dreams, badly produced, miserable cast. I'll tell you some of the ridiculous, because I don't know how some of the people get in my dreams. I mean, there are people I wouldn't even say hello to, you know, by the water cooler. But there they are, they're playing a star role. So what, you know. So I'm lying in a sack there. And I'm suddenly aware of the fact that my dreams are beautiful. One thing about my dreams that I must say, they have beautiful mood music. Yes, there's great music behind them. And so here's this, no, I'm serious, there's this scene there, I'm laying in the sack, and all of a sudden I start hearing this music come from way faint in the distance, way faint, Sam, hear it. It's fantastic. It's my God Almighty, I'm having another dream. Boy. I could hear this music coming up, see, inside my soul. I'm waiting to see what it is. And the curtain is going up. The house lights dim in the vast theater of my dream world. My God, what an orchestra. Fantastic. There I am sitting in the auditorium, see? I'm the only guy watching this unbelievable show. It's got this big purple curtain hanging there with the lights playing all over the top of sheets. What an overture. What I'm hearing is the John in the next room dripping, but I didn't know that at the time. See, what your dreams always do is to take what's happening around you and build it in. See, this is the sound of the John dripping. Listen, yeah, you see, always. What I'm hearing really is that nut with his hi-fi upstairs. But there it is, see, in his dreams. Wow. And the curtain goes up, and the show is about to begin. Wow, the show is about to begin. And I'm waiting. And the orchestra sort of violins are beginning to play, and his figure comes out on the stage. I'm watching a television show. For God's sakes, it's a TV show. This guy's got on a hat, like a fedora, you know, like the kind they wear in the gangster movies, you know, that Al Capone always wears? Look at this hat. It's Walter Winchell. I'm dreaming of Walter Winchell. And Walter Winchell's doing a television show. He's out in the middle of the stage, and he's introducing this guy to tap dances on a xylophone. And there's the guy starting to tap dance on the xylophone.
Oh, I'm stopping on.
Oh, my God. What a nightmare. I wake up, you know, I fight. Have you ever had a dream and you try to wake up in it? You know, you dream, you fight to wake up. Well, I struggled to consciousness. I rushed in, you know, and I knocked down this diet Yoo-Hoo. A little finger of vodka in it. Pooh, wow, you know. I sat there in the darkness. Then it hit me. Did Walter Winchell ever have a television show? Well, that's the question I'm asking you. Is there anybody out there can help me? Did I create a Walter Winchell? No, did Walter Winchell ever have a television show that was like a bad 10th-rate imitation of the Ed Sullivan Show, which is a bad 10th-rate imitation of the Ed Sullivan Show? Did he? Anybody, please, call. If anybody out there remember, did Walter Winchell ever have a television? This is important to me. This is important. I mean, psychologically, it's very important. I have to know this. I mean, if I created this television show, then I'm really in trouble. But if I am merely rebuilding in my mind a bad television show that I actually once saw, well, then it's not nearly as serious. Maybe 4 or 5 years of shock treatment, I'll be all right. But I'll be okay. As soon as we get through the major surgery, it's going to work out. So was there a Walter Winchell show? No. Guy calls up and said, no, there was never a Walter Winchell show. Well, now, how come that guy called up before he even said it was Walter Winchell? What is this? Was there a Walter Winchell show, and when was it on the air? This is a very scary thing. Oh, there's a lot of scary stuff happening, friends. You don't know what's going to happen from day to next. You just don't. Another guy calls up and said, no, there was no Walter Winchell show. Well, I'm just going to tell you this. I'm just going to be honest with you. If this persists, I will be unable to make these appearances nightly from here on. I mean, it's just making me too nervous. Just impossible. No. I know, I'll spend all my time on it. I've got a place. I'm gonna go. Don't worry. I'll be all right, Jack, as they say in England. I'll be all right, Jack. Hey, by the way, I think that's not a bad idea. You can buy yourself a Playboy toothbrush. Did you hear about this, Tony? Huh? Playboy toothbrush. Flesh-colored falsies, minis, of course, on regulation toothbrush handle. Excellent for healthy gum massage. Two little bazooms on it, you know. It's kind of exciting. What's this? Is this Walter Winchell calling? No, what does he say? There was a Walter Winchell show? Oh, my. No. I'm so... Okay, well, then what are you doing? You're waving me off. What is it? Been waved off the flat top again, eh? Well, while we're doing this, while we're trying to straighten this out, psychologically, it's very important to me, friends. You don't realize. We'd like to give you the good news that psychologically you were right. There is such a thing as the year one poster. And I'm delighted to report that the mail has been equally divided between those who think it's... Well, there's an old Yiddish term that I could use here. They would probably offend some of you, so I better not. But they say that that's what that poster is. Now, I don't know what, I wouldn't say that. So the word they use sounds like some kind of a new axiom-type detergent, but never so long. But nevertheless, I would like to tell you that the other group has written in and said it's, the poster is a gas. I personally think it's groovy. I enjoy it. It's, a little obscene, but outside of that, you can look at the other side of the poster. You can stay away from that. But it's a total realization, really. Now, what is a total realization? Well, the flagship on Route 22 is a total realization. No, it is. It's completely itself. It's it. You can't say that it's good or bad. It's it. Is the Grand Canyon good or bad? It's it. It is itself. So if you'd like to own one of these magnificent year one posters, they are in about 5,000 different colors. It's a poster. It's about 36 by 24 or something like that. And you'll have a lot of fun with it for just $2. Send a check or money order to Year 1, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. 1-0-0-0-0-0-1. That's the zip code. I repeat, year one, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. Money back if you are not totally flipped out by it. Well, all right. Was there a, you say, there are, the audience seems to be sharply divided between people who say that there was a Walter Winchell show and the non-believers who say that there never was. Well, now, it could be that those people who say there was are suffering from the same affliction that I am. They could possibly have seen it, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, a couple of, you know, years ago. They're lying there, and all of a sudden they see Walter Winchell tap dancing on a xylophone. Now, yeah, I mean, I don't know. So anybody who does say that there was a Walter Winchell television show, could you please tell me when it was on and what it was about? No, this is important. I mean, and what did they call it? And when was it on? What station? The whole bit. Hey, listen, speaking of the... I've got a very, very sad story to tell you here. I don't know whether you ever get it. No, don't go, Nick, please. How would you be able to communicate daily in your life without resort to... I hate to use this word, but it's effective. Profanity. Nick left immediately. His old man's probably listening. But nevertheless, oh no, I hope he is. Oh no, I really do. I'm delighted to report that Nick left hurriedly when the word profanity was mentioned, and he just blushed and just left. I'm just curious about the whole thing of profanity. I read in the Wall Street Journal a very discouraging little note that I'm going to read to you. Wall Street Journal. And, of course, it's all connected with the Walter Winchell show, the whole thing. I mean, you know, the whole ball of wax, the whole, it's just such a... Hey, you know, you can buy a sexometer. Indicates your sex rating. Nice gift box, it says. I don't know how I got out of this list. I mean, I'm on some unbelievable sucker list. Just terrible. You can buy bikinis for men. It says bikinis for men. Of course, that would have gone over big in the park here in the past weekend, that big thing there. But that's something else again. Now, what's this? The piece from the Wall Street Journal. Did you hear about it? Pittsburgh. Coal miners, everyone knows, and I'm quoting the journal here, are a rough and tumble breed. At times, it is said, they even swear. Well, now, you know, that I don't want to make any miners that are listening mad, but this is the Wall Street Journal, and I presume some miners do. They say, oh, gosh darn it. Sometimes, you know, when a dynamite goes off too soon and blows your friend to kingdom come, oh, shucks, we done it again. But tough talk has been officially banned at the Western Pennsylvania coal mines operated by J&L Steel Corporation under a gentleman's agreement. Worked out, I bet that was a great gentleman's agreement. Worked out in federal district court here. The steel maker and officials of the United Mine Workers Local 762 agreed yesterday that as part of a pact to end an 11-day work stoppage, the company and union would instruct supervisory personnel and rank and filers, quote, against the use of profane language in the mines. Now, I feel better about that. I like to see that done. And, of course, during lunch hour, they can all read the Bobbsey twins to each other and all that kind of stuff, and sit around and drink Ovaltine and stuff and talk about the old Superman comics and stuff. It says the strike-triggering incident occurred late last month when it is alleged a mine foreman used profanity in assigning a job to a miner at J&L's Vesta No. 5 mine. The miner didn't take kindly to the way he was asked to perform his job. Well, I can imagine how he was asked. Well, I can think of 3 or 4 different variations on how to tell a guy to get on the stick. And many of them inform interesting surgical operations of one type or another that involve brooms and all kinds of stuff. But nevertheless, the request can't be repeated in the newspaper for general circulation. It was said in closed session in the court what the chief told the other guy when he told him to go to work. But the matter was finally smoothed over, and now there will be no more profanity in the mines. Well, now, yes, I can think of only one phrase, that would say, how I believe that that's going to go out. It has to do with the bulls and all that in the fields. But nevertheless, I will tell you this. I am sorry to hear this. Because When I was a mere stripling, I wonder how many of you remember tentatively using your first bad word. Tentatively. You're out at second base at the Warren G. Harding School. Somebody hits a ground ball, and you go charging in at it, and the ball rolls right up your arm and belts you one on the chin, knocks you silly, and you get up and you say, "Oh, damn it." Oh, I mean, that's the way to say. Nothing is more embarrassing than to hear girls attempt to swear. They're not good at it. Now, I don't know why this is so. Many of them do it a lot, but they're not very good at it. They're little. It's like Louis Armstrong or whoever it was who made the famous cliche remark about jazz. He said that if you have to. If you have to ask about it, you just don't. You'll never know. You'll never understand it. Well, that's the way it is with swearing. And that when I was, I grew up in a steel mill town. Now, profanity in that town was really, it was a major art form, and there were practitioners of it who were really good at it. And I remember one of the things that happened to me in the steel mill. Now, I don't often tell you stories about the steel mill, but I'll tell you a great thing that happened to me in the steel mill. That I was 17 working in the mill, see, in the summertime. Boy, it was exciting. Every sight in the mill is exciting. I mean, there's nothing dull as far as the physical characteristics of a major steel mill. It can only be compared to possibly a second-rate Balkan war, or a work of nature. It's just a tremendous thing. I mean, there's no way. And by the way, I'm right now at work on a television show, which will be on this spring, about the steel mills, doing a TV show in color. It's going to be, it's going to be shot this summer. But this is a fantastic world, and there's all kinds of guys working it. In fact, on any given shift at the Inland Steel, where I happened to work at the time, which was a great steel mill on the shores of Lake Michigan. They had something like 14, or no, it wasn't in Gary. No, Gary's Carnegie, Illinois. This is in Indiana Harbor, Indiana, on the shores of Lake Michigan, and at least 14,000 guys would be in there at a time, on a shift, three shifts. Yeah. All right, we just have gotten a report. Somebody got the Walter Winchell file. Oh, he called it the Walter Winchell File. Is that the name of the show? And he actually had a show like that? It says that he had a show in 1952 and 1956. Well, don't turn it so I can read it, honey. 1952, 56, 57. In 1957, he did a show called the Walter Winchell File. And in 1960, he did a variety show. Huh. Walter Winchell did a show. I must have seen it once. And stored it away for future use. Ho, ho, ho. I can't understand. That was very interesting. I didn't see it, huh? Wait a minute. We'll get the report here from the producer. Yes, dear. Wrong phone when it's lit up. All right. Wrong phone. I just got John gambling. Yeah. Yeah, quit calling up. All right. What's all that about? Oh, what a silly thing to say. Quit calling up. Don't call me anymore. We just got the report on the Walter Winchell show. Don't call anymore, please. My three listeners keep calling insanely. Stop it, you fools, you mad, impetuous fools. Cut it out. But nevertheless, I'm going to tell you a story. Now, I'm going to give you a word of warning. Yes, because there are many people, I suppose the world is full of prudish people who think that when a guy says something bad, that's a real mortal crime or sin, And I'm not one of those people. And the idea that miners are now enjoined by the union, that they can't swear when they're down in the mines. If a guy can't swear when he's down in the mines, what the hell can he do? I mean, after all, what's left to a guy? Oh, no, that's terrible. I mean, I just think that's bad news. That's like telling a dog he can't scratch fleas. It is, Because swearing is as much a part of the working man's world as breathing is, as eating salami sandwiches at lunch and drinking a great big can of beer while you're doing that. Then when you finally finish, a little bubble comes up there, and there's a feeling of satisfaction. So anyway, I'm working in a steel mill, see, and I'm a kid, 17, and at that point, I heard my share of bad words. I mean, like we all have had. And, you know, used casually, sometimes used seriously, other times used, and rarely, artistically. And there aren't many people who know how to swear well. I like to pride myself that I'm pretty good at it. Oh, yes. You saw the New York Times review of Shepard's show at Town Hall last year. What it said about that. Well, I'm not going to tell you what it said. Look it up. But nevertheless, I'm pretty good. And so I recognize a fellow artist. And many people wonder under whom I studied. Well, I'm going to tell you who I studied under, if you're curious. It was not my old man, who was good. But there's a difference between mere facility and virtuosity. Believe me. And you only run into the virtuosos in any field, rarely. Okay? So I'm working in the steel mill, see, and day after day I'm running in and out of the open hearth and the number 2 blast furnace and in and out of the number 1 AC shop and in and out and the number, well, the 14-inch merchant mill and the hot strip and the hot plate and the cold strip and the tin mill, in and out, running like mad, saying the whole thing was a giant kaleidoscope and nobody had come into focus yet. And so one day I was assigned to the tin mill. And I'm down in the tin mill assorting office, all excited, seeing this beautiful down there. It's all lit up inside with strange argon lights. And this is because the argon lights are used to detect specific visual defects in tin plating. And tin plating, by the way, is beautiful when it comes out of the electroplating machines. It glows like some kind of an alive metal, like a sheet of frozen ice. Beautiful. You've never really seen tin plate. Most people have never seen it because you'd have to be right there because within a very short time, a thin coating, and it's done purposely, a thin coating of oxidation occurs that dulls the quality of the tin plate. The tin plate that has just been plated is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Just beautiful. It's an ice blue, kind of shimmering, strange liquid, almost looks like mercury, beautiful thing, these plates of metal. Under these blue argon lights, it's just like some fantastic sea of shimmering blue silver. So I'm running through this tin mill every day, I'm digging the scene. And one day, old Chester Gotch, Chet Gotch is sitting there in the checkers table, and he's laughing, see? And I said, what are you laughing at, Chet? And I kind of looked up at him, and I looked up towards him. He was such a big official guy there. He said, oh, man, he said, that Riley is something else. I said, Riley? Riley? Something else? Riley? He said, listen, he says, have you ever heard Riley swear? I said, Riley swear? I'm kidding. I said, Riley swear? He said, listen, I'm going to tell you what to do. He said, you go down to the picklers. He says, I want you to go down straight down to the tin mill pickler, straight down. You know where that is, down by the shipping dock, right? I said, yeah, yeah. He says, go down to the tin mill pickler and look for old man Riley, see? He says, you can always tell Riley because he's wearing his BVDs. He always works in his BVDs. I said, yeah? He says, yeah, he works in BVDs, see? And he has BVDs and he has blue jeans on with the BVD tops. And then he wears a straw hat. He says, you'll see him. He's got a straw hat down there. And he runs the tin mill pickler. I said, okay. He said, I'll tell you what you do, though. When you go down there, he said, walk up to Riley. He said, just walk right up to him and say to Riley, hooray for the English. I said, okay. And he says, when you do that, stand back. And he said, and listen, really listen. So I go down through the tin mill. I didn't realize I was about to have and enjoy one of the great artistic experiences of my life. I walk down through the tin mill. I walk past the flying shears, which is a spectacular sight. I walk past the scrap sheet shears, which are also spectacular. I walk past the shipping dock, which is wild. Tremendous machines, great overhead cranes. And then I walk into Riley's particular province, which is as close to hell as you could ever conceive of a place. It's got great fumes, tremendous vats, boiling H2SO4. You could just smell this acid. And I walk up to Riley, and Riley's in the middle. He looks like Neptune, a tall, skinny guy. In fact, he looked a little like Slim Somerville. He's smoking one of these long, skinny cigars, these Mexican cigars.
And I go up to Riley, and his scream is swirling around him, and he's yelling at the guys, come on, you guys, get on a stick. He's hollering. He ran his place like Captain Bligh ran the old, you know, the old ship, man, the Bounty. I walk up to him and says, Riley. He says, yeah, what do you want, kid? I says, Riley. He says, yeah, what do you want? What do you want, kid? Can't you see I'm busy? I said, Riley, hooray for the English. He stopped. He staggered back. He said, what did you say, kid? I said, hooray for the English. And then he started to sway. A great swelling chorus. It welled out of him like some fantastic, ethereal symphony. I have never seen such a... it was a beautiful work of art, a mosaic. Sparkling lights, greens and blues and yellows, purples and light oranges, and a streak of jet black would go whistling through. Riley wove a magnificent stained glass tapestry of pure profanity for over 10 minutes without repeating a single word. Like a vast human Wurlitzer organ of decadence. It just poured out of him. And instantly, all the guys put all their tools down. You know, they stopped to listen. You don't mess around. When Stan gets us playing a horn, you stop talking. You listen, right? Well, when old Riley was swearing, everybody stopped. The guy in the overhead crane, he stopped the crane high overhead, you know, and he's listening. And Riley is backing off, see? And he's aiming it at the ceiling now, and it's bouncing around the walls. Well, he went out for 10, 15 minutes. And every day for 6 months after that, I spent my lunch hour down there. I would walk into the tin plate pickling department, and I would just stick my head into steam and holler, hooray for Winston Churchill! It's always good to see true artistry at work. It warms the cockles of the heart and reminds you that man is capable of superhuman feats. He can rise above the mud, the muck, and the mire of simple humanity. Hang loose, friend. Think a dirty thought before tomorrow if you can.